Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is 4.06 a.m., and here's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com. The Red Sox, they are your World Series champions, winning Game 5 on the road in Los Angeles to take the World Series 4-1. David Price, simply outstanding once again. 7 innings pitched, giving up just 1 earned run, along with 5 strikeouts. It was Joe Kelly and Chris Sale combining for the final 6 outs, all 6 strikeouts of the game. Weather tonight, it is rainy this morning in Boston with temperatures in the mid-40s. This is an extended edition of Red Sox Review. It will continue all the way until 5:30 this morning when Kirk and Callahan come your way. I'm Patrick Gilroy, and that's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
The pitch, and he swings and drives one left center field, deep. Hernandez back at the wall. Goodbye. Home run, Steve Pearson. The Red Sox lead it 2-0. Can you believe it? Steve Pearce.
Recapping the Red Sox win.
2-2 to Mookie. Here it is. And he swings and hits one deep. Left field. Back goes Taylor by the wall. Goodbye. Home run. Mookie Betts. His first ever in the postseason. And the Red Sox lead it 3-1. Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship. The Boston Red Sox beat the Los Angeles Dodgers 5-1. They win the World Series.
Dial 617-779-7937. Now, Red Sox Review on WEEI.
It is Red Sox Review. Right here, Sports Radio WEEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we make our way together until 5:30 this morning, taking your phone calls at 617-779-7937. Whether you're still up from the game last night or you're just getting up, getting ready for work, we're continuing to talk about your Boston Red Sox as they deserve it. They are the World Series champions. Once again, this team wire to wire for the entirety of the season. And for those of you guys that were kind enough to listen to me on Red Sox Review, on Late Night for the last year or so, doing all this stuff, following this Red Sox team since spring training. The one thing that we talked about so much here was this team and the fact that they never had to really face any sort of adversity because it was a wire-to-wire season. I mean, to finish the season with 108 wins, and now when you combine the playoffs, 119 wins, that is absolutely obscene. You generally don't see wire-to-wire seasons like this. And that was my biggest legitimate fear for this team going into the postseason, was the fact that they didn't face adversity throughout the regular season. And you kind of had to factor and figure that there would be some adversity in the postseason. After all, I know that this team won 108 games, but they were facing the 100-win Yankees. They were facing the 103-win World Series champion Astros. I mean, these are legitimate teams, legitimate opponents, and the Red Sox, they had their way, really, with both of them. And then when they make their way to the World Series, I understand that the overwhelming, prevailing thought was that the Red Sox were the favorites here, but you did have to look at that Dodgers team and respect the hell out of them, and respect the hell out of what they've been able to accomplish here in the last few years. They're a legit opponent. And now they only had 92 wins, which isn't all that much when compared to 108 for the Red Sox, 100 for the Yankees, and 103 for the Astros. But I tell you what, these were three legitimate teams that this Red Sox team not only went through, but they kind of had their way with them. And that, to me, is the most surprising part about all of this. Wire to wire, from day one of spring training until winning the World Series in five games. I kept on waiting for that adversity. I kept on waiting for this team to get punched and get knocked down, but it never really happened. Every time we thought, okay, this is the moment. There's some adversity now. They never let it get the best of them. And what did they do? They came back and they rebounded immediately. You know, the loss against the Yankees in the ALDS, they didn't let it bother them. They came back the next day and won. The loss in the ALCS to the Houston Astros. We all assumed at that point, oh, it's the Astros. They're going to flex their muscles. They're the better team. The Red Sox, they didn't let it get them down. They came back and they won the next game. They never let these losses, these very few losses, as this team went, what, 11-3 for the postseason? They never let a singular loss turn into two or three. They never let it get out of control. They always had control in each and every one of these series. And that, to me, is the biggest compliment that I can give this team. They never succumbed, and they never gave up control. It is Sports Radio WEI. It is Red Sox Review. Room for you guys at 617-779-7937. Back out to the phones we'll go. Let's go to Andre. Andre's headed to work. Andre, you're next up here on WEI.
Good morning, Patrick. How you doing?
Oh, I am living the dream, Andre. What's on your mind, man?
I think we all are. I said, my son is 30 years old. I said, he and the rest of Boston has been blessed.
Yes.
Since Brady shocked the world in 2001, we've had 11 championships in Boston.
It's amazing.
Pretty remarkable.
And not only that, when you think about the championships, that's one thing because that's the ultimate. But then when you combine that number 11 with how many times our teams have been in the finals or played for a championship, it's seemingly every year one of these teams has put themselves in a position to potentially win a championship. It's bananas.
And after 86 years frustration for the Red Sox, they've been in four championships since. They've won every one of them for us.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And that's why I don't know how you feel, Andre, about this ownership group here, but I take a lot of phone calls and take a lot of people here generally don't really care for Tom Warner and John Henry. And I don't get it because it took this team 86 years to get that one they got in 2004. And under this ownership group, now that's four World Series. They are the common denominator in all these World Series victories.
Yeah, you got to be positive. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And, you know, even with Price, I mean, we were all down on Price, and now we owe him not an apology, but we have to accept him as the champion that he was. He came through when we really needed him.
And that's the thing.
That was truly amazing.
Yeah, you're right. And listen, I appreciate the phone call. Drive carefully on your way to work. It's raining out there. It's a little slick out there. Just watch the weather report here, and people are saying it's a little slick out there. So be careful on your way to work, Andre, as we're all a little bit excited still here at 4:15 in the morning. But I will say this, you know, when we talk about this ownership group, they do. They get a lot of heat here. And does John Henry have a way with words? No, like he doesn't. And does Tom Warner come off as a cheesy TV executive? Sometimes he sure does. Like, I get it. But when you look at the accomplishments of this team, and you look at what this team's been able to do under their ownership group, it's absolutely amazing what they've been able to do. And they are, make no mistake about it, they are the common denominator here. This team in 2018 is very, very different from the team that won in 2004. You know, I know that we had Jason Veritek, a special assistant. I know that we saw David Ortiz, you know, doing TV. So there were a few of those guys were there. But they don't play a day-to-day part in what this team is accomplishing. And again, you look at this team, 2018. You look at 2013. You look at 2007 and, of course, 2004. The only common denominator between those four teams is this ownership group. And at least we know that Alex Cora appreciates what he has here with these owners.
Congrats, Alex.
Thank you.
You're the fifth rookie manager to win the World Series, and talking to La Russa about your command of, he said, the staff, your ability to make decisions out of the box, you know, can you talk about the experience of the whole year? I mean, you're now a guy who won the World Series as a player, a bench coach, and a manager. It's pretty heady stuff.
Yeah, first of all, they gave me a chance. They saw me as a capable manager, and they gave me a chance. It's funny because when they announced it, we were flying to L.A. last year in the, you know, in between the championship series and the World Series, and ironic enough, we win it here, so it goes full circle. It wasn't as easy as what people think, but it starts with talent. It starts with ownership. We know, everybody knows, they talk about it. We got the highest payroll in baseball, and that's a challenge with the way they see us, you know, the media and the fans. You know, we had to win because there's a lot of money involved. But they do an outstanding job giving Dave a chance to keep improving the team. Dave did it in the offseason. A lot of people thought that we were going to go one way, and we signed Mitch, which I thought it was a great move right away. A guy that not only respected he's respected in the clubhouse, but he's a good player. And we got him, and then obviously we were patient enough with the J.D. Martinez saga, and he ends up with us. He adds Nunez, and then Pierce, and then Kinsler, and then Nate. A lot of people got on him because supposedly we didn't improve our bullpen, but little did they know that we got a starter and a rover at the same time. Just a matter of the usage that we were going to give him. And Dave did an outstanding job. He's done great. I'm very happy that, you know, he finally, you know, got his second ring, I think, for Dave. It's amazing. And then those guys in the clubhouse, the coaches and the training staff, it was obviously a total organizational effort because for us to do the things we did with the pitching staff, the medical staff had to be very involved, and they were. And we know about Chris, we know about Nate, and David, their health, they were on top of their game in October, and that's a testament of who we have working with them.
There he is right there, Alex Cora, talking about the ownership group here and the management group with Dombrowski and the fact that this ownership group, time and time again, has proven that regardless of the mistakes that have been made in years past when it comes to, you know, salaries. You think about a guy like Pablo Sandoval and the amount of money that he's still making from this Red Sox team, right? Zero impact. Huge mistake. And it does. It has an effect on the budget here. But this ownership group really doesn't let it get in the way of winning. And you heard Cora talk about Dave Dombrowski. And the fact is this. And we talked a lot about Dombrowski. And there was a whole show that we did here at the very end of the regular season where we talked about this Red Sox team, if they were to bow out in the first round in the ALDS against the Yankees, is Dombrowski's job on the line? Because don't forget, at that point, you know, he was still continuing to catch a tremendous amount of heat for not going out there and addressing this team's singular largest issue, and that was additional bullpen arms. At that time, the team had gone through a stretch where they literally blew 12 out of 24 save opportunities. And at that point, there was a lot of heat and a lot of eyes on Dombrowski. But apparently this guy knew what he was doing a whole hell of a lot more than we realized, because when he went and he got Evaldé, apparently you just heard Cora say it, he knew that he was getting a starter and a quote-unquote rover. Rover is not a term that we have ever used here until the 2018 playoffs started getting going here. And even in the very beginning of this playoff run against the Yankees, I'm not sure anybody realized that they were going to continue to use starters, whether it's Rick Porcello, whether it was David Price, Chris Sale, Nathan Evaldé. All of these guys became dual players. They were starters. They were relievers. And what happened? You took this team's singular biggest area of weakness, and you transformed it into this team's largest area of strength by the end of this postseason run. And all that credit has got to go to this ownership group, because they were willing to go out there and not only put a tremendous team on the field to start the season, but they were willing to spend the additional capital, additional dollars. I know that these guys aren't high-priced players, but the fact is the payroll was higher at the end of the season than it was at the start of the season. And they were comfortable doing that, spending their own money like this, because they are about winning. And we can sit here and make fun of John Henry's voice and make fun of Tom Warner for being a TV salesman and all the stuff that we like to make fun of them for. And we're all just happy that Larry Lucchino's not around anymore. I get it. But the one common denominator between all four of these World Series titles is the ownership group. And now the next step here is Dave Dombrowski went from a guy that we talked about potentially having his job on the line if the Red Sox were to lose to the Yankees in the DS, to a guy now that you've got to consider as a baseball Hall of Famer. We all said it before, if he got his second world championship, you know, his second World Series, you've got to consider him very strongly as a baseball Hall of Fame guy, and now he's got it. And to me, I think he has just earned his way in to the Hall of Fame. So it is Sports Radio, WEEI, it is Red Sox Review. When we come back, we will continue with your phone calls as we make our way together until 5:30 this morning. And Kirk and Callahan, the number to join me here, 617-779-7937.
Well, well, we meet again, Mr. Bird. How you been?
I'm great, Mr. Diger. Nice shirt. Just looking forward to game 5.
Hey, man, I thought you were a green and white guy, a basketball guy. What do you know about baseball?
Baseball and basketball are the same game.
Same game?
See this? This is round. See this?
It's round.
Where do you play hoops?
Hardwood.
What's this?
Hardwood.
This game's the same. You hit shots and you play defense.
And you move the ball with great handle.
Until one team comes out on top.
Man, we're opponents again tonight.
Like 1979. I prefer 1984.
I love you, Larry. I wish you good luck. And you know I really mean it, even though I don't.
Love you too, Magic. But you're going to need a lot of luck, especially when you're down 3-1.
You know, Larry, what's great about this, one of our towns are going to win another championship.
You know I'm going to need this to keep the light out of my eyes, because that trophy is shiny bright.
This is more my style.
We will see, my friend. We will see.
I got you.
Play ball.
That was just awesome. Again, you know, Larry Bird doesn't do a lot of that stuff. Magic is everywhere. You turn on late-night TV shows, Magic's there, tampering, you know, talking about LeBron James, talking about Paul George and getting accused of tampering and doing what he does. He's got a big mouth, and he's an entertaining guy. Larry Bird, for them to pull Larry out was awesome. And what did I say going into the World Series? I said it would be great if in Game 1 you could somehow get Larry Bird to Fenway Park to throw out the first pitch. And this was almost just as good. It was so well done. And for a Celtics guy, a Celtics honk, you know, to see Larry get involved and represent Boston, you know, it is his second home. But he hasn't made it home since the early 90s. So for me, that was a very, very cool way to get into Game 5. And really, Game 5 didn't disappoint from that point on. It is Sports Radio, WEI. It is an extended edition of Red Sox Review as we make our way together until 5:30 this morning when Kirk and Callahan come in and take over. My name is Patrick Gilroy, and there is room for you guys at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And how about this Red Sox team once again tonight? If you didn't hear the story, it's awesome. The post game, they're celebrating, they're in the clubhouse. And what do? They go back and they take a page out of the ALDS and they're blasting, you know, New York, New York, and sort of just giving the trolling right back to where it first started. And I love that about this team. They are defiant and they do not forget. And I feel like when your team is led by David Price, that's exactly what you're going to get. You heard David Price talk about it in the post-game press conference as well, and we'll get to that in a minute, because David Price, for as well as he pitched and for the complete 180 that he had, both on the mound and off the mound, I mean, really, the way that we look at him, the way that we listen to him, the way that we think about David Price is now very, very different from the guy that we had, that we thought about going into the postseason. You know, think about that for a minute. Going into the postseason, think about the lack of ability we thought that David Price had and the lack of confidence that we had in David Price, and then compare it to how we think about David Price now just a few weeks later. Again, I've never seen somebody with such a 180 in such a short period of time. It is Red Sox Review. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Room for you at 617-779-7937. Let's stick with the calls. Let's go to Steve. Steve's in Miami. Steve, you're next up here on WEEI.
I can't believe how late I'm staying up to talk to you.
it's now. Is it officially early now, Steve? Is it no longer late? Is it like it's got to be early, right?
I don't know. It's all I know is I don't even think I'm going to go to sleep tonight. I've got to get up at 8 o'clock. You know, if I go to sleep, I'll probably sleep late. So I might as well just stay up. I'm doing some work at home, getting some guests to call tomorrow for some cruises. You know, remember, I'm a travel agent. Yep. So doing some work, but listening to you, and wow, what a great night it is. And tonight's going to be also great when Buffalo gets punished by the Patriots. But a couple of things.
Yeah.
One, well, actually, I'm looking in my sports room. One of the plaques that I have is from 2004. We have the Red Sox and the Patriots winning on the same year. And there are tickets. It says, what's it say? Year of the Champions. And they have pins and pennants, pins from both sports, and from all the games and all that. And believe it or not, I found it at Marshall's down here. And nobody here knew what it was. And I said, oh, I think I'm taking that.
It's a must-have.
And it was only $25.
Look at that. That's a win for you, Steve. I get it. That's a good one.
Oh, without a doubt. But I want to talk about a few things. One, Dombrowski. Everybody, including myself, he didn't go for a reliever. Well, apparently he and Cora had talked about what they were going to do, and because it seemed like they had a plan all along, they just didn't tell. And plus, the other thing is they had confidence in Kelly and even Hembry and all the others. I mean, they just, it all came together and stuck like a sore thumb out against all the other teams and all the everybody. It was like they knew what they were doing, and Cora has to be given all the commendation because he got this team. I mean, the last 2 years with John Farrell, they didn't have the confidence. They didn't have the feeling that they did this year. And you know, I remember listening to one of your shows, somebody said, oh, they're not an exciting team. They were very exciting. And I'm not just talking about the World Series, all year through. And, you know, Dombrowski's got to be given credit. I mean, Steve Pierce, Eboldi, and yes, he messed up in game three for Lyle Kinsler, but he had some solid games during the end of the year that they had a solidified second base. So I'm not going to be a Kinsler basher, even though that could have really gone wrong. But Dombrowski, his second World Series title, he had very good Detroit teams. He could be a Hall of Famer down the road as well. But
no, he is. I think he cemented that, Steve. And listen, I appreciate the phone call. I'm up against it here. But I think he is a Hall of Famer. I think that this cemented his legacy, that he's absolutely going to be a Hall of Famer. And let's just look at this team, you know, for next year as well. Next year, they are ready, you know, willing and able to come back. They are a loaded bunch. The big change, I think, and we heard Rob Bradford talk about it earlier here on the program, is probably going to be the closer. You know, the closer is most likely going to be occupied by a different guy next year. But other than that position, they should bring back, you know, 95% of the same team that just won the World Series. So Dombrowski's going to have another great year on his resume as well. So I think he's earned his spot in the Hall of Fame with this World Series victory. But the guy that did it all for this team, and the guy that I think, you know, really carried this team on his shoulder, on his back, is unbelievable to me to say this, is David Price. And we sat here and we killed him here on Late Night, and we killed him here on Red Sox Review, and we've done it all season long. He has been the gift that keeps on giving when it comes to content here for a late night host. And he shut me the hell up with his performance, both out of the bullpen and as a starter throughout the entirety of this playoff run. And other than that first Yankee start, he really has become the most dominant force that this Boston Red Sox team has, again, both out of the bullpen and as a starter. And he became the guy that, with his own sheer will, would not let this team go down. When you look at the frequency in which he pitched here, especially in this World Series, he's a guy that you can't call soft and you can't call selfish. He is a guy that put his team first. And he's a guy that came through even when, you know, he's on short rest, not once, but twice. And you heard David Price in the post game. You know, he talked about this because the fact is this. If he wanted to get up there and give double middle fingers up to the entire media group and give it up to all the fans, he could have. And I felt like he started to go there just a little bit. And now we'll play some of David Price, because as this thing goes along, as he gets more and more comfortable with the media, you'll hear him change his dynamic just a little bit.
Energy was good. Felt good in the first. You know, Freeze wants to hit the ball to right field. He's a really good October hitter. He has been for every team he's been on, you know, at this stage, you know, winning the World Series MVP. Whenever they played Texas, 11 or 12, I don't remember what year it was, but he swings the bat well. And, you know, to get that double play, that was huge after that. And then to kind of settle in after that double play, that was big.
And Tyler, to your left.
David, you always talked about how this was going to happen someday and that you just needed to pitch better in the postseason. You were always open about it. Now that you have, now that you've succeeded at this stage, what does it feel like? And how difficult was it to overcome all that?
It was tough, absolutely. To answer that question in spring training, day and day, over and over, anytime it got to September, playoffs, I hold all the cards now, and that feels so good. That feels so good. I can't tell you how good it feels to hold that trump card. You guys have had it for a long time. You've played that card extremely well, but you don't have it anymore. None of you do, and that feels really good.
And Jen in the second row.
The confidence coming into this game, and you know this Dodgers team has bounced back so many times. Just where was there a point in the game that you felt you know we got this, we're doing this? Like
when Pierce hit that two-run home run in the first, that was huge. You know, we have done a really good job of scoring in the first inning all postseason. To get that two-run cushion before you even throw your first pitch, you know, even though I gave back a run with that first pitch that I threw. But when Pierce hit that ball, that was I think that pumped up everybody.
Ken, to your left, David.
David, what did you prove? What did you think?
I can win a big game. I don't know. You know, I haven't really thought about it. I haven't reflected on it. I mean, 33 years old now. Last time I was in this type of situation was when I was 23. So a lot of things have changed since then. And to be able to come out on top and to be able to contribute in October, that's why I play the game.
And to your right, Clinton.
AC had a lot of faith in you, man. You know, can you tell me a little bit about how far you've come in your relationship with him over the course of this year?
Yeah, I mean, our relationship is definitely very unique. You know, it started first week of January or second week of January, you know, whenever we went out to eat lunch, you know, Sale, Sandy, Jackie Bradley, and myself, going to BJ's there in Fort Myers, just him kind of setting that tone, you know, from that first meeting with, you know, just four of us. You know, I think, you know, he met with quite a few people, you know, throughout the offseason, and, you know, it was the Florida guys, and, you know, he met with us, but, you know, we have, again, we have a very unique relationship. You know, we're always in contact, you know, even when we're away from the field. So I've said it many times. He's just, he's cool.
In the second row.
David, did it mean something to you that Alex let you bat that last time so you could stay in and keep pitching?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, if the score was, you know, a little bit different at the time, you know, it might have I might not have gotten that at bat. So I got to give credit, you know, to our offense, you know, pushing those runs across in that inning. I think it was the inning JD hit the home run to center field. So that gave us I think a 3-run lead at the time. That was huge. You know, I was throwing the ball well. I wasn't coming out of the game at that point.
And Jeff on the left.
David, as the story goes, as some of us have heard, you, in Houston when you were warming up in Game 4, you kind of figured something out with your changeup, I believe. Can you talk about what happened there and how big of a difference you think that's made in the game since then?
It was more so just with my delivery and with my hands, just allowing me to be more fluid, you know, to not have any stops whenever it was time to go. And that was, I mean, I really found that playing catch earlier that day, and I remember after I got done playing catch, you know, Tech walked over to me, and Veritech that is, and he was like, I see your, you know, your hands are higher now. And I was like, yeah, I think that that will allow me to be more fluid, you know, both in the windup and in the stretch. And it just puts me more on time. You know, it enables me to be able to execute every single pitch that I'm trying to throw. And, you know, it helped with everything.
Buck up front here.
David, when the celebration was over, coming off the field, you threw your cap. Somehow you managed to get it up over there.
Yeah, it hurt. I don't know why I did that.
What was your emotion at that moment?
We have a lot of Red Sox fans here, and hopefully one of them got that hat, and they can tell that story, you know, for the rest of their life. You know, it's, I don't need that hat. I don't even want that hat. You know, it stinks. It smells bad. So, and I just I appreciate those fans sticking around, you know, rooting us on, and just wanted to give them a little piece of tonight.
The guy who caught the cap is from Boston, and he moved out here because his family, his mother has MS, and she needed a warmer climate. And she's a huge Red Sox fan, and he says he's going to keep the cap the rest of his life. So,
well, that definitely makes it even more special.
Ken, to your left, we'll just do some last ones.
Hey, David, your teammates speak so highly of you. What does it mean to you to be a great teammate?
A lot. I mean, this is a game we get to play. You know, it's the relationships that you make, you know, while you do this, while you play this game, that that's what makes this game so special.
In the first row.
David, you really flipped the narrative of your postseason career, this series, and especially towards the end of the Houston series. How do you think that is going to change your approach, mentality, confidence moving forward? And do you think there is that one special moment that really helped you turn the tide?
My confidence was never altered, you know, through however many seasons I've been to the playoffs, however many times I've failed in October, however many times I've failed in the regular season or against the Yankees. You know, my confidence was never altered. You know, I always had belief in myself and my abilities, and to be able to come through, you know, on this stage and in October for myself and for my teammates. I know I can do it now, you know, and that's always a good feeling to have. You know, it's just good to know.
I'll do two last ones. Tyler.
David, obviously you showed, you know, being a teammate by going out there on short rest and pitching in the bullpen in game three. When you do that, when you prepare to do that, how is the preparation different, and how does it manifest itself on the field? Because it looked, I mean, obviously the results were really good.
I mean, being in the bullpen is definitely different. You know, you don't know when you're going to pitch. You don't know if you're going to pitch. You just kind of have to stay ready and stay locked in. You know, just play along with the game, just knowing what situations are ahead, and just knowing when your number might be called. But I don't know. I mean, it's October baseball, and this was the World Series. If AC would have asked me to start every game, I'd have done it. You know, I wanted to be out there. I wanted to have that baseball. I wanted to be special for my teammates, and you know, we all stepped up this year and in the playoffs, so that was huge.
I'll take a last one in the back.
David, to start game two, relieve in game three, warm up in game four, start game five. I mean, what did you learn about yourself along the way?
Nothing. I mean, I told you guys, Dr. Andrews said I had a special elbow, and I'm sure you guys ridiculed me and mocked me and made fun of me and did everything that you guys do. You know, I wasn't lying when he told me that, and now you guys see that. you know, I feel good right now. I didn't want to come out of the game in the eighth inning. I wanted to continue to go. If it took me 120 pitches or however many pitches it took to get 27 outs tonight, that's what I wanted to be able to do. I felt good. I still feel good. That was very special.
David, you're a world champion forever now, so congratulations.
Okay. Thank you. One more, real quick. Sorry, David, just one more. I mean, clearly your teammates mean the world to you. You got emotional talking about them, thinking about them before. Equally so, have a chip on your shoulder maybe with regard to the media. But do you have anything to say to the fans?
We're World Series champs. That's special. This is a very special team. We rallied together all year long, starting in spring training. So we'll see them all at that duck boat.
David, congrats.
Thank you.
David Price right there, and you could tell the first 9-10 minutes of that, he was awesome, giving all the right answers, actually sounded humble through parts of it. That last minute, he sort of took a turn and showed us that David Price that we've come to know and love over the last couple of years. But again, I do not blame him. If he wanted to get up there and just give double middle fingers up to the whole crowd, all the media, all the fans, everybody, he earned it. Because he overcame not only the unique elbow, it wasn't special. Dr. Andrews did not call it special, he called it unique. He overcame all of that, overcame the carpal tunnel, overcame the Fortnite, overcame the allergies, overcame everything that he's been through since he got here. And without him, the Red Sox are not World Series champions. It is Sports Radio WEEI. It is Red Sox Review. My name is Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, I know that we took all your phone calls staying up very late last night, but now people are starting to get up, you know, mill around, going to work. Yes, we are still on the air 24 hours essentially here until 5:30 when Kirk and Callahan take over. So there is now room for you at 617-779-7937.
Red Sox Review on WEEI.
He deals. Swing and a miss and a high fastball. Tied him up inside and got him.
So Price's job is done. And what a job tonight. 7 innings plus one batter. Retired 14 of the last 15 he faced. Getting a huge ovation on the road as he departs. And he is now lined up for what would be another postseason win. Kelly kicks. He snaps one home. A swing and a foul tip into the glove. Oh, Vasquez for strike three. Joe Kelly strikes out three.
Wow.
And they're going nuts in the Red Sox dugout right now.
Here's the 3-2 again. And a swing and a miss. A terrible swing at a slider. He was all tied up. One out to go. Two out here in the ninth. The last five Dodger batters have struck out. Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship. The Boston Red Sox beat the Los Angeles Dodgers 5-1. They win the World Series.
It is Red Sox Review right here, Sports Radio, WEEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we make our way together until 5:30 this morning when Kirk and Callahan take over. Until then, we can continue with your phone calls at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And, you know, for as long as we've been covering the Red Sox and covering sports, or at least myself here, each one of these teams, they're all uniquely different, right? And the thing about this team that I think I'm going to remember the most when I look back 5, 10, 15 years from now is how consistent this team was from the moment they got started in spring training. You go all the way back to February and March. This team finished spring training with the best record in spring training, for whatever that's worth. Then they jumped out to that incredible 17-2 start. And it was at that very moment, you know, sitting here the early portions of the season, doing late night and doing Red Sox Review, wondering aloud with you guys, with the fans, if this is sustainable, if this is who this team was. Because remember, going into the season, the Red Sox weren't even the favorite in the AL East. Remember, going into the season, it was all about the Yankees. The Yankees made the right moves in the offseason. The Yankees got the right big bat, where the Red Sox got J.D. Martinez, who was, in a lot of circles, considered sort of like the guy that was left over. Remember how long the little dance went with J.D. Martinez and the Red Sox. It was the deal that could never get done. So 17-2, they jump out to that incredible start, and we sort of wait for a shoe to fall, a shoe to drop, and say, they're not this good. They can't be this good. But it never really came. This team was wildly consistent from start to finish this year, even through the injuries. And there were injuries. You go back, and nobody expected Dustin Pedroia to miss virtually the entire season. You know, he had that surgery last year in the offseason to get right for this year. And he comes back, and he plays just three games. Chris Sale gets out to that incredible start and is the best pitcher in baseball through the first half of the season. Then it seemingly almost immediately following the All-Star game, what happens? He goes on the DL, comes back off the DL, has 12 strikeouts in just five innings. We think all is well. Goes immediately back on the DL. And from that point on, he never pitched more than five innings in a game. And going into the postseason, nobody was really quite sure what to expect from that guy. You know, you dealt with injuries there. You dealt with injuries with David Price. I mean, love him or hate him, and right now most of Boston is loving David Price, and deservedly so. This was the same year where we talked about carpal tunnel and Fortnite and allergies to fresh-cut grass and to cats and everything else that we went through with David Price and his inability to be effective against the Yankees and his inability to even want to pitch against the Yankees. All that stuff happened this year. And despite all that noise, this team managed to go from start to finish as the best team in baseball. And they never really relinquished that. They never went in one of those inevitable baseball droughts. When you play a 162-game regular season schedule, it's inevitable at some point that you're going to wind up losing, you know, 8 out of 10, 8 out of 12. This team never really went through that. And again, that's why going into the postseason, so many of us question this team's ability to overcome adversity, because throughout the regular season, they never really had to face it. So now they go 17-2 to start the season. They deal with the injuries. They deal with the issues, whether it's the injuries to Dustin Pedroia, the injuries to David Price, the injuries to Chris Sale. They still, nothing seemingly affects this bunch. They get past the All-Star break, and what happens? They finish the season with 108 wins. And while they're going into the playoffs, we still had tremendous questions surrounding both David Price and Chris Sale. And the largest question of all loomed over this team's bullpen. Because remember, we sat here, we took phone call after phone call after phone call, not for days, not for weeks, but for months, from Red Sox fans pissed off and upset that this team, that Dave Dombrowski specifically, hadn't addressed this team's single largest area of need. Right? The bullpen. This team at one point blew 12 out of 24 save opportunities after the All-Star break. For the best team in baseball, that is a tough pill to swallow, especially when there were decent bullpen arms available for not all that much talent, right? You didn't have to go out there and give up huge talent to get somebody who would have been capable of helping this team out of the bullpen. So even going into the Yankee series, despite the 108 wins, the doubters were still there. Hell, I was one of them. We sat here the last two shows that we did together. One was a late night and one was a Red Sox review leading into the Yankee series. All right, we sat here till 2 o'clock in the morning on both times, taking phone call after phone call after phone call of people telling me and me agreeing, all right, so I'm the jackass too, but agreeing that Dombrowski's job could potentially have been on the line if they lost in the ALDS because, for whatever reason, he failed to address this team's most glaring need, the bullpen. Maybe it's because Dombrowski had a plan. Maybe it's because Dombrowski and Cora had gotten together and discussed this roving pitcher scenario, which, by the way, isn't entirely new. You know, it's something that Cora sort of plucked away from Houston. It's what Houston did in the playoffs last year, and it worked for them, and it worked for the Red Sox this year. But nobody really anticipated that. Nobody saw it coming. Nobody saw Rick Porcello and David Price and Chris Sale and Nathan Flippen Avalde, of all people, becoming as stabilizing factors as they became, not only as starters, but out of the bullpen. And it's amazing how much better your bullpen is when suddenly You know, you have reliable guys to pitch in the sixth and seventh and eighth inning, and you're not relying on just Joe Kelly to get you to the closer, right? And then suddenly, throughout that Yankee series and into the Astros series, an amazing, miraculous transformation occurred. And this team's single largest area of potential weakness in that bullpen became this team's single largest area of strength. That bullpen became virtually unhittable, became virtually untouchable. And I don't care how they got there. I don't care that they use roving starters. I don't care. They got it done. And Dombrowski went from a guy who's was taking a lot of crap and whose job would have been potentially been on the line if this team bowed out in the ALDS to a guy that may have just cemented himself as a baseball Hall of Famer with his second World Series. I mean, that is a huge, huge divide to sort of overcome. And Dombrowski did it. And David Price did it, completely changing the perception that we've got of David Price. No longer the guy that's unwilling and unable to sort of perform in these big spotlight-type games, playoff games, maybe even Yankee games. I don't know. We did get a text here essentially saying that, you know, he doesn't mean to nitpick, but the one thing that David Price hasn't proven yet is his ability to be dominant against the Yankees. And we'll see what happens next year. But David Price, to me, has shut everybody up. And Dave Dombrowski has shut everybody up. And here we go. The consistency continues. The team wins 108 games. And then throughout the playoffs, they go 11-3 in the postseason to win the World Series. And it's their fourth in 15 years. And we talked about this before. And before we get out of here today at 5:30 this morning, we will talk about this again because, to me, it is a huge underlying point here. We can talk about Alex Cora and the effect that he's had on this team. We can talk about Dave Dombrowski and the effect that he's had on this team by, yes, did he strip a lot of what the minor leagues had for talent to get this team ready, willing, and able to win a World Series? He sure as hell did. Was it worth it? Of course it was. They won a World Series. I think Dombrowski just cemented himself as a future Hall of Famer. But the one common denominator here, all right, it's got to be the ownership group. And I know John Henry's an easy target, and Tom Warner is an easy target. You know, cheesy TV executive, you want to ask him questions about why they fired Roseanne. And Tom Warner, I mean, John Henry, let's face it, we've all sort of made fun of John Henry. Those two guys have been easy targets, but they are clearly the common denominator here throughout the last 15 years where this team has won 4 World Series championships. So at some point here, what they're doing is clearly working. We can sit and poke fun and make fun all we want, but what they are doing is working. And hell, this team right now, they are your World Series champions. And that, to me, is absolutely unbelievable because even the most optimistic Red Sox fan going into this postseason, I don't think anybody saw all of this coming. It is sports radio. WEI, it is Red Sox Review. My name is Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, we can continue with your phone calls and continue to talk up this ownership because they deserve it at 617-779-7937. It is 5:07 a.m., and here's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com. The Red Sox, they are your World Series champions, winning Game 5 on the road in Los Angeles to take the World Series 4-1 over the Dodgers. David Price, simply outstanding once again, 7 innings of work, giving up just 1 earned run with 5 strikeouts. Joe Kelly and Chris Sale, they combined for 6 strikeouts, the final 6 batters for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Weather today, it is a rainy and sort of crappy morning out there, temperatures in the mid-40s. This is a very special extended edition of Red Sox Review. We'll wrap things up here coming up around 5:30 this morning. Until then, I am Patrick Gilroy, and that is what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
The pitch, and he swings and drives one left center field, deep. Hernandez back at the wall. Goodbye. Home run, Steve Pearson. The Red Sox lead it 2-0. Can you believe it? Steve Pearce.
Recapping the Red Sox win.
2-2 to Mookie. Here it is. And he swings and hits one deep. Left field. Back goes Taylor by the wall. Goodbye. Home run. Mookie Betts. His first ever in the postseason. And the Red Sox lead it 3-1. Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship. The Boston Red Sox beat the Los Angeles Dodgers 5-1. They win the World Series.
Dial 617-779-7937. Now, Red Sox Review on WEEI.
It is Red Sox Review right here at Sports Radio. WEEI, it's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we make our way together until 5:30 this morning. As always, the number to join me here is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And I have to applaud the effort of Red Sox Nation. You guys held strong until about 4:30 this morning. Call after call after call until about then. And then, I don't blame you. It seems like everybody went to bed. And you know what? It was okay. This was a celebratory type of show that we did here tonight. And I don't blame people for being a little bit overexcited here with this team. I mean, I'm the guy that sat here, myself, Villani, the other guys that did Red Sox Review, and I sort of feel like a fake, like a fraud, because you think back to some of the storylines that we talked about, and we got so much content from throughout the season. I mean, remember we sat here, we talked about this team's, you know, the fact that they were, I don't know, really beating up on the Sisters of the Poor, and I hate that expression, but there is no other way to put it. I mean, that's what Shaughnessy said all season long, and that's what Maserati said all season long, that's exactly who this team was, and they weren't ever going to be good enough to really do damage, to take their sort of their term, to do damage against the likes of the Yankees and do damage against the likes of the Astros. But that's exactly what they did. They shut everybody up from start to finish this year. And for me to sit here as the guy that's guilty of hosting these Red Sox Review shows and doing these late night shows where we would take call after call after call for hours about this stuff, about the fact that, you know what, the 108 wins, it's not real because you play so many games against Baltimore. So really, what does that tell you about your team? What I didn't know about this team, and I feel like this is something that, you know, you guys will continue into later on today with Kirk and Callahan and the rest of the programming here, is we've all learned a lot about this team throughout this playoff run. And anybody that tells you that they knew that this was going to be what the Red Sox were going into the postseason, I mean, they'd be lying to you, because nobody knew that this team was going to use these roving pitchers and become a team with probably the best, most consistent bullpen in all of baseball. But that's what happened from game one of this playoff run against the Yankees until what happened 6 hours ago tonight, right? That's what happened over this 3.5 week period. They went from a team that had a huge gaping holes in that bullpen to the strongest bullpen in all of baseball because of these roving pitchers, to use Alex Cora's term. And again, you know, we talked a lot, and everybody seemed to talk a lot about the roving pitchers being this newfangled idea, but it's really not, because Cora took this idea right from the team that he was the bench coach for last year. If you go back and you rewatch the Astros in the World Series last year, you will see what they did with their starting pitchers as well. So I feel like this is a bit of a trend, and it's going to continue. Whether the Red Sox continue it next postseason or not, that's sort of irrelevant here. This might become the new normal. Because when you look at what this Red Sox team was able to do, and you look at just how weak that bullpen was, you look at all the question marks that were in that bullpen, there was zero trust in that bullpen. But don't you feel like, okay, I can trust Nathan Eovaldi now. I can trust even David Price now. Of course, you can trust Chris Sale and Rick Porcello. These were guys that we had no idea were going to become staples of the bullpen. And it's not like they came in and had one rogue, awesome performance, right? No, they became regulars. And it's not like they gave up their starting jobs either. They did both exceptionally well. And to me, that's almost a complete change in the dynamic of what this baseball team is and the character of who they were and who they are, right? Because all we talked about all season long was, well, you know, 108 wins, but look at how many times they play Baltimore. You know, that number is not really real, because you got the Orioles in your division, and they're terrible. You know, you look at the teams that they beat up on, and you say, but they're not really battle-tested. What's going to happen when they get to the playoffs? What's going to happen when they face real competition? I mean, you look what Alex Cora was able to do with this team, and I feel like they answered that question, and they answered it in alarming, overwhelming fashion. They had no questions, apparently. And even so, when we talked about this team going into the Yankee series, the one common denominator was what? they were going to need. They were going to rely on Chris Sale. He had to be healthy. He had to be right for this team to have a real opportunity to not only get into the ALCS, just make it out of the ALDS. You needed Chris Sale for that, apparently. But no, Chris Sale hasn't been right for most of this postseason run. And they still, they found other guys. How much money has Nathan Eovaldi earned throughout this postseason run? He's a guy that was making less than $2 million this year. How much money has he earned as he makes his way into free agency? Now, when I was doing TV earlier tonight, I was on the show with Jim Corsi, former Red Sox pitcher. And he estimates that Nathan Eovaldi earned himself a minimum of $15 million a year. He estimated, you know, 4 years at 15, so $60 million. And is that going to be too rich for this Red Sox team's blood for next year? I don't know. But to me, he certainly became a part that you don't want to lose. I mean, he was valuable both out of the bullpen and as a starter. And when you look at this team and you look at the accomplishment of winning the World Series, you must ask yourself, do they even get to this point without Nathan Eovaldi? So this team has overcome so many of these questions and overcome so many of these challenges. And I find it laughable that I was the guy sitting here talking about this team and the fact that we didn't know if they had the capability of being resilient because they had not faced adversity throughout the entirety of the regular season. And you look at how they answered that call. You look at how they answered that bell. It's simply outstanding. It is Sports Radio WEI. It is Red Sox Review. Room for you guys at 617-779-7937. Let's get back out to the calls. Let's go to Rich. Rich is in Ohio. Rich, you're next up here on Red Sox Review.
Hey, Pat. Thank you so much for taking my call. You actually read my tweet about David Price and the Yankees, so I appreciate that too.
Yeah, no problem.
But I know this is just the kind of a kumbaya thing tonight, but I mean, I can remember sitting there at a game in April of 2003, and Rocco Baldelli came up with the Rays, and everyone cheered him, and then Ramiro Mendoza was starting for us, and we all chanted Yankees suck. And if you told me at that time we'd have four championships in the next 15 years, I'd said you were crazy. So I don't know. It's just I'm over the moon. I hope everybody stays humble and we don't act like Yankee fans and we just keep this going. And also I'm glad that for once we don't have to hear Theo Epstein.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. And again, you know, Theo got a lot of credit when he was here. He got a lot of credit when he was won the World Series with the Cubs. And listen, Rich, I appreciate the phone call. And of course, Theo went to Ben Sherrington, and now it's Dave Dombrowski. But you look at this team, and again, we talked about this in the 4 o'clock hour quite a bit. You look at the ownership group here. Forget about Theo. Forget about Sherrington. Forget about Dombrowski. Those are all seemingly interchangeable parts because the one common denominator that we've had here throughout these four world championships over the last 15 years is this ownership group. And they have been the butt of a lot of jokes, but maybe they're the ones with the last laugh because you look at what they've accomplished here. 86 years of futility and now four World Series championships in the last 15 years. It's simply, simply amazing. It is Sports Radio WEI, it is Red Sox Review. Room for you at 617-779-7937. Final segment here, Red Sox Review. Right here, Sports Radio, WEI, it's Patrick Gilroy with you guys. The number to reach me here is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And first, I just want to thank everybody for staying up late with me tonight. This was awesome. You guys kept this thing sort of locked and loaded until about 4:30 this morning, and that was simply amazing to help carry me through the night here. What you guys don't know is that when I leave here, I'm headed to the office. We've had a long day of candy sales ahead of us here. So that's what's on tap for this guy when I get out of here. But I do, before I leave, want to just sort of reemphasize something that Rob Bradford said to me a couple hours ago when we had him on the program. You know, we talked about him, we talked about this team and the likelihood of this being more than just a one-year championship window. You know, that's what they're trying to do over there with the Celtics, right? So when the Celtics brought their big three together 10 years ago, we knew that that was a limited opportunity. We talked about a three-year window. Realistically, they tried to open it up to five or six, but it wasn't. It wasn't a five, six-year window. It was a three, and they were lucky they won that championship in the first year because we know what happened after that with the injuries and the age and whatnot. This team here, you know, you want to win a championship this year, and you were able to put it together. And according to Bradford, he says, you know what, next year you're going to have a real opportunity to do it again. But then after that, all bets are off. So this is really something that the moral of the story is we got to enjoy this while we've got it right here with this Red Sox team. You know, coming up next year, Bradford sort of predicted that there's going to be one major wholesale change going into next year, and that's going to be your closer. You're going to lose your closer. He's going to get paid significant money, and the Red Sox probably aren't going to step up and pay him the kind of money that he's looking for. And while he was up and down and, you know, a bit shaky in the postseason, he's still one of the premier or the premier closer in all of Major League Baseball, and he's not going to be back here next year. Now, Bradford said that that wasn't anything that should impede this team's ability to contend again next year, but it's that year after that that you really have to take a close look and consider some of the changes that may be made here. You know, you have to ask yourself, will Chris Sale be re-signed? J.D. Martinez, there's an opt-out clause in his contract. Will he be somebody that they're able to hold on to and retain here? You know, Mookie Betts, what's going to become of him? Nathan Eovaldi, you know, he's somebody that could be gone as soon as this year is over now. I mean, he's going to get a huge, significant pay bump. He is. He earned himself a lot of money. This postseason run was outstanding for Nathan Eovaldi. And he's going to go from one of these, you know, $1.5 million, $2 million pitchers to, we see how pitchers are overpaid. I mean, Rick Porcello, he's a good pitcher. He's not a great pitcher. He's a good pitcher, a reliable pitcher. And he makes $20+ million a year. So if he can make that, we know that Nathan Eovaldi, based on the back of this postseason performance, he is going to get paid. A big decision to make there as well. And of course, you know, what do you do with Kimbrel? So the moral of the story is enjoy this. Enjoy it. Because as spoiled as we are here, and as frequently as we think that these things happen, there's going to come a day where we snap our fingers and it's all going to be over. You know, right now, we started the show, and I'll end the show the same way that I started it. You know, the optimist in me, the ego that I've got here, being a guy that's been in and around Boston sports for the better part of the last two decades, tells me, you know what, Gilroy, this thing's not even close to over. There's a very real chance that we could be sitting here in January with the New England Patriots contending for another Super Bowl. And who knows, the Celtics, you know, Vegas has them picked as the second most likely team to win a championship this year. And we could be sitting here in June in the NBA Finals with the Celtics having a real opportunity to contend for another championship. So this might be the first of three championships consecutively here. Who knows? But the fact is, and don't forget about the Bruins, by the way. You know, they're a team that they might be a move away from being a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. You know, they're a step below the other two teams. They're the Celtics and the Patriots, but they are knocking on the precipice as well. So when you look at the embarrassment of riches that we have here, it seems like it's this never-ending story, right? And we've talked about Tom Brady since he was about 37 and with the concern that, you know, his reign could be coming to an end sometime soon. And, you know, if you started counting down when he was 37, you look at him now, you've been counting down, wasting 4 years of your life worrying about the end instead of enjoying the present. And I guess that's the moral of the story that I'm trying to get across to you guys is, like, let's stop looking at these things and wondering to ourselves, when are they going to come to an end? You need to enjoy what's in the moment and what you're watching right now in front of you. You know, we took a lot of calls tonight with people concerned about what's going to happen next year. What's the next move for the Red Sox? And while there's going to be plenty of time for that debate and conversation throughout the offseason, I'm not sure that tonight was the right night for that sort of conversation. Because this particular edition, this particular group, was a very special group, a very special addition. More than likely, the single most impressive addition of the Boston Red Sox in their history. And that's what we all had the privilege of being a part of this year and watching this year, game in and game out. And it's not a surprise that with this particular group, this particular addition, the Red Sox once again returned to the sort of ratings that we were used to here on EEI and the ratings that they were used to on NESN. And Fenway Park came back to life this year. You know, the last couple of years under John Farrell, Fenway Park was dead. I told the story a couple of weeks ago that I took my kids to a playoff game last year, and we walked up and bought tickets at face value 20 minutes before first pitch. I mean, that's a joke. That isn't what you do here in Boston. But for whatever reason, those last two teams under John Farrell, they never connected with the fan base. And despite the fact that they won their division, won 93 games each year, they just never made that connection with the fan base like this team has managed to do. And I don't know if that credit goes to Cora, the players, a combination of them all. But if you had the opportunity or had the privilege to make it to Fenway Park, I would say anytime post All-Star break this year, but especially in the postseason, I'm not going to say the decibel level was quite to the 0-4 level, but it was just about there. I mean, the magic was back, the energy was back, and it was a great place to go watch baseball again. And by the way, you had to buy your tickets in the secondary market again, all right? No longer could you walk up day of game, day of playoff game, and buy them at face value, like I was able to do last year in the playoffs, the final year to John Farrell. So that's a big change here as well. Not only did this team win the World Series, they won it and they reconnected with the fan base here. And the evidence is proof positive in the ratings here on EEI, the ratings on NESN, the ticket sales, and just the energy level overall at Fenway Park. And that's going to be one of the most memorable things that I remember about this particular group of Red Sox. Because, you know, one of the storylines that we talk about is the fan base getting apathetic, right? Is the fan base sort of so spoiled that these things don't mean as much as they used to? And while that's sort of an undeniable fact, I think that that fact was overstated and overplayed in the last couple of years. I really do. Because you guys proved this year that despite the fact that this wound up being their fourth World Series in 15 years, no, you guys were still hungry for more. Again, the ratings are there, the ticket sales are there, the energy level was there. And this was a very, very special edition of your Boston Red Sox. It sucks that the season's over. I mean, again, as a guy that does quite a bit of Red Sox review, I had fun with this bunch. Much more fun this year than last year. And the hope here is that, yeah, there's going to be a couple of changes in the offseason, but the hope is that we get to come back and do it again next year. I mean, how lucky are we? How great are we? And maybe the next 24-hour shift here will be in January, when hopefully the Patriots are back where they belong in the Super Bowl. And maybe I'll get to do it again. All right, maybe they'll win this time. In January, when I did it, they lost. That kind of sucked. This was fun tonight. So thank you to everybody that participated in the program tonight. Fantastic job. And this has been a tremendous amount of fun for me. An honor for me, your Boston Red Sox. They are your World Series champions. They dispatched the Dodgers in five in Los Angeles. David Price is your postseason hero. I'm Patrick Gilroy, and I'm out of here. Bye-bye.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.